fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African football. The Council for East and Central Africa Football Associations, SACAFA, will be represented by four teams at the Africa Cup of Nations tournament, which will be held in Egypt from June 21st to July 19th. Burundi, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania are all hoping to raise the SACAFA banner high in Egypt. But realistically, what chances do these teams have of going far in Egypt? Burundi is making its Nations Cup debut, while Tanzania is appearing in the African football showpiece for only a second time. As for the Kenyans, they've never advanced past the group stage at a Nations Cup. And we have to go back 41 years for Uganda's best performance, runners-up to host Ghana at the 1978 Africa Cup of Nations tournament. Football analysts in the SACAFA region have been weighing in on the recent Nations Cup draw ahead of the big tournament. They say because of inexperience, the SACAFA teams probably won't shine in Egypt, but they can build on their matches in Egypt to improve football in their region. Magumi Davis Rakawinj filed this report from Kampala, Uganda.
Patrick Kanyomozi, who heads the Uganda Sports Press Association, says he does not believe any SACAFA member country has a chance to progress beyond group stages. He says Uganda Cranes, who face the host Egypt and the neighboring DR Congo, is placed in a more difficult group. He also says Tanzania and Kenya in the same group make it even more harder for any of them to progress.
It's going to be very tight because they have Senegal in there and Algeria. Senegal is definitely most people's favorite to progress from that group together with Algeria. So I don't see Kenya and Tanzania making it out of that group. And then finally, Burundi is in a group which has Nigeria, who should be number one favorites to make it out of it. They are the top seeds. And then there's also Guinea, another West African giant that has been playing at this level for a very long time. Then the debutants, Madagascar, who I think should be on the same level with Burundi, despite the fact that Burundi had a better qualifying campaign, but Madagascar actually qualified before Burundi. Uganda Cranes will play in Group A, which has hosts Egypt, DR Congo, and Zimbabwe. Competition debutants, Burundi, are grouped alongside Nigeria, Guinea, and Madagascar in Group B, while Tanzania and Kenya are in Group C, which also has Algeria and Senegal. Sports writer John Vian Nzimbe describes the groups as exciting.
This is a level where the best can only play. So if the best are the only ones that can only play at this level, therefore you've got to be ready for whichever opponent you're pitted against. Certainly, I would think that the East African teams generally should take this opportunity as one from which they can gain experience and come back even after the tournament and build on it. Because I think that one of the biggest undoings that East African teams have faced is this rush kind of tendency that quick fix, want to go there and play and whatnot, but they do not organize themselves to have formidable sides.
But Ruben Oriombo, a sports reporter in Kampala, says he believes the East African can sail through at least to the knockout stages.
My expectation is that they go and maybe become third in the group. They qualify as one of the third best losers. I don't see them causing an upset, maybe being number one or number two.
Sports analyst Dalin Chayune agrees, but he says the East Africans have to start preparations early for them to have any slight chances of success at the finals.
If they do prepare really early, you feel, for example, depending on the group where you are, I'll give an example of the Uganda Cranes. If they're in Group A and they have a North African opponent, then the Cranes have got to find an international friendly against a North African opponent. It will be the same against a Central African opponent to test themselves with what would simulate as Democratic Republic of Congo and then probably Southern African opponent to match what Zimbabwe will offer them in the tournament. It is the same that Burundi should do, and as well Kenya and Tanzania.
All these analysts contend the continental tournament will give a chance for the East African players to showcase their talents to millions of people that will be watching. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Magumi Davis Rwakaninje in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Magumi. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. As Magumi mentioned, Tanzania is in Group C at the Nations Cup, along with Kenya, Algeria, and Senegal. For reaction to Tanzania's grouping, Iron Mike Mbonye called Dar es Salaam, where he reached the head coach of Tanzania's Taifa Stars, Emmanuel Amunike.
If we have qualified for the AFCON, we shouldn't be expecting easy ride. We must prepare ourselves to play. The whole 24 teams that qualify, they all have equal opportunity. But of course, we have to wait. The tournament has to start. Then from there, we start seeing how things go.
Talking about preparations, how soon do you intend to go to camp for the AFCON tournament?
Well, we'll go to camp very soon. You know, the league is ending by May, towards the ending of May. And after the league ends, the players also, they need their own space to see family and rest a little bit. But of course, our thoughts and our thinking goes towards our preparation. Preparation, what is preparation? Preparation is for you to prepare your team from the psychological point of view to technical and tactical point of view so your players can be able to be in a position to compete. I think this is the key word. Any other thing, I don't know, preparation, you can also gather and just make a bunch of friends and then go to play. But of course, the reality is that if we want to be able to make something meaningful, we must prepare.
Do you have injury worries as you prepare for the AFCON tournament?
You don't think about that, but of course, those are things that you cannot, it's beyond your control. We pray injury not to come. We pray that our players can continue to play in their various clubs, and then when they come, they will be ready to compete. This is the first time most of them will be going to AFCON. So it's a very big opportunity to our players. It's a very big opportunity to we, Tanzania. And hopefully, like I keep on saying, you know, we'll be at the best to give the very good account of ourselves when the time comes.
What is the mood in Tanzania as the team prepares to go to Egypt to play their matches?
Well, the mood is that everybody is happy that after a very long time, they will be part of the event in Egypt by June. People are making their plans to come and support the team.
That's Emmanuel Amunike, the 1994 African Footballer of the Year and the head coach of Nations Cup-bound Tanzania. I know our many listeners in Dar es Salaam are saying, "Go Taifa Stars! Go Taifa Stars!" as they prepare for Egypt 2019. And Coach Amunike spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest better part of the bottom of your heart. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
And my Voice of America colleague, Shaka Sali, will be waiting for you Wednesday night at 18:30 UTC GMT with another edition of Straight Talk Africa. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Turning to disabled sports, Manuela Scher of Switzerland won Monday's women's wheelchair race at the Boston Marathon, crossing the finish line in 1 hour, 34 minutes, and 19 seconds. It was just the latest big marathon victory for Manuela. She also won the women's wheelchair races at the 2017 Boston and London Marathons. And last year, Scher won the women's wheelchair category at the Chicago and New York City marathons. Manuela's victory on Monday was also a Boston redemption story. Manuela dropped out of the 2018 Boston Marathon because of difficult weather conditions. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Manuela Scher before last year's London Marathon, and their conversation began with Andy asking Manuela about her 2018 Boston experience.
It was the worst conditions I've ever had in a race, and I've been racing a long time. It was just a combination of really, really low temperatures and heavy rain and a really heavy headwind all the way. It just made it impossible for me to finish. And it was heartbreaking because it's the first time that I couldn't finish a race.
Has recovery been quick?
I feel okay. I feel a lot better than Monday, obviously. But I have some muscles, you know, that are pretty bad just from racing in rain. It's always a bit different. But I still have 2 days, so I'm pretty optimistic to recover fully.
Boston is a hilly course for anybody. London, well, certainly not so hilly, but I've heard wheelchair racers talking about it being a technical course, very technical. So give us more insight into what it means for you as an elite wheelchair racer when you say London is a technical course.
It's mostly flat, but there are a lot of turning points where you have to really be able to control your wheelchair, and there are parts that are really bad roads, so it's really bumpy. You have to be careful that you don't get a flat or damage. That's what we call a technical course, when there are a lot of turning points and, yeah.
So I presume you clearly were very pleased with doing 1:39.57 last year. But getting closer to the 1:30 mark, how would you rate your chances this time?
The 1:30 mark is just counts for Boston, I think, because of the downhills into A to B course. So we had really great conditions last year with a tailwind and warm conditions. That's why it was possible. On a legal course like here, it's not possible to go under 1:30 for a woman. Not right now. Never say never, right? So, but I still think it could be a fast course. Like 39 is pretty fast for us.
Anybody who the last, well, I suppose 20 years or so has looked at the results in elite wheelchair racing, men as well as women, will see a lot of Swiss flags come up beside them. I mean, yourself, of course, but I'm thinking of Heinz Frey, who's in the veteran category now, but I know Heinz has been winning races all over, Berlin Marathon as well, and indeed the current Olympic men's champion, Marcel Hug, who's also run competing here. How come? I mean, okay, does the Swiss Federation put a lot of support into wheelchair racing? How does that come about?
When I had my accident, I was only 9 years old. And at that hospital where I went in Nottwil, there was a big group of wheelchair racers from the really like early generation, like Heinz Frey and Franz Niedlisbach. They helped a lot to develop wheelchair racing. So they improved, you know, seating positions and like just the material and the gear. So I kind of grew into that. When you are in Switzerland and you want to do sports, there's always a possibility that or you almost have to try wheelchair racing. And when you like it, you're included in a big group. I think that helped.
Yeah, I can imagine that togetherness, and also, well, the danger of dealing in stereotypes, but Switzerland, precision, technical precision, efficiency, or am I just dealing in Swiss? I mean, do you see it coming together? I mean, do you think that's a factor? You talk about that technical expertise?
Maybe, but I think it's also because we had those faces like Heinz Frey and Franz Niedlisbach. It always helps to get new or young people to get involved with wheelchair racing if you have like a role model, and we definitely had that, so maybe that helped more than just the, you know, the things you just mentioned.
That Swiss athlete Manuela Scher, the winner of Monday's women's wheelchair race at the Boston Marathon, And Manuela spoke with the energetic Andy Edwards in London. Andy says Manuela Cher will compete once again at the London Marathon on April 28th. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten joins us now with a sports story out of Cape Town, South Africa. That's where a group of girls hope their love of sports will help shine a bright light on their Lavender Hill neighborhood, which has been deemed a hotspot for crime. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Lavender Hill is notorious for being one of the most violent townships in Cape Town, but a group of girls hope to put their Lavender Hill neighborhood on notice for a very different reason, softball. The sport is relatively new in South Africa and started out as only an extracurricular activity at the local high school. But the game grew in popularity, and in 2012, the Lavender Hill Softball Club was formed. Marlene Peterson, a former Lavender Hill High School student, is now coach and chairperson of the team. She says softball does more than help athletes achieve success on the field. The sport helps them achieve off the field as well.
I think if there wasn't softball in the area, we probably wouldn't have the kids today. Another achievement that the club have, we've just recently two of the matriculants have matriculated. We got them into UWC. And most of the girls, we have about five or six that's matric this year. And last year they started talking and saying, what are they going to do? We asked them what career they're going to go in. They say, look, they don't know because their mothers and fathers don't have money to send them to college and stuff.
Peterson also lists the lack of funds as a major challenge facing the softball club. Many players are not able to afford their way to participate in tournaments. But that does not deter the Lavender Hill team from maintaining a high standard in athletic performance. The girls, age 14 to 19, train three times a week until late in the evening and compete on the weekends. And they compete in a mixed league, which means they often face women who are more than twice their age. Most of the Lavender Hill athletes represent the Western Cape region and South Africa's under-19 team. And two players are part of South Africa's senior team. Erin Peters is one of them, and she says the demanding schedule makes for a tight-knit group.
Like last year and this year, we definitely became closer as a family on and off the field. And running onto the field with them today is very important because we're going to need to be with each other all the time. The strength has to be there, the momentum, everything.
And the Lavender Hill Softball Club has their share of avid supporters, like Marsha O'Reilly and Cleo Van Ruyen.
What inspiration they are. You know, we all know the circumstances of Lavender Hill. And to see these girls come out every week, and they come and they give it their heart, they give it their all. They are such an inspiration for us all. And I have such high hopes for them and their future.
After two seasons going from just entering some league and then going to the number one or the number two spot, and what makes them significant to me is the fact that they are 14 and they are 15 and 16. I think maybe the oldest person is probably 19 in this team. So to me, it's the best thing to witness because this is the future.
And as for the future of Lavender Hill, neighborhood grounds have been broken to construct a communal sports facility that will feature sports like rugby, hockey, and softball. And with the recent inclusion of softball in the upcoming 2020 Tokyo Olympics, athletes hope to soon hit home runs out of Lavender Hill and onto the world stage. And that's all from me. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. And yes, here's hoping those Lavender Hill girls hit a few more home runs ahead of next year's Olympics in Japan. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America, they're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In National Basketball Association playoff action Tuesday night, the Toronto Raptors, the Denver Nuggets, and the Portland Trail Blazers all scored first-round victories at home. In the northwestern U.S. city of Portland, Oregon, the Trailblazers beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 114-94 to take a 2-0 lead in their best-of-7 series. The Blazers got big games from their guards C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard. McCollum scored a game-high 33 points, while Lillard had 29 points. The series now moves to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, where Game 3 will be played Friday night. In Toronto, Canada, the Toronto Raptors even their series with the Orlando Magic. The AP's John Letherby reports from Toronto.
Toronto ran over the Magic by a 111-82 final after another big night for Kawhi Leonard. After finishing with 25 points in Game 1's loss, Leonard took control of the contest of the second half, finishing with 37 points.
All of us buying in and, you know, just wanting to come out and win this game. We didn't feel like we played our best basketball game one, and just wanted to protect home floor.
The Raptors' Kyle Lowry was key as well. After being held off the score sheet in the opener, the veteran added 22 points. Aaron Gordon led the way for the Magic as top scorer. He had 20 on a night Orlando committed 17 turnovers. Game 3 moves to the Amway Center on Friday night. John Letherby, Toronto.
Thanks, John. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Denver, Colorado, where the Denver Nuggets even their first-round series with the San Antonio Spurs at 1-1 each. The AP's Randy Stahl reports from Denver.
Jamal Murray scores 21 fourth-quarter points as the Nuggets rally from two 19-point deficits to even their playoff series at 1-1, beating the Spurs 114-105. Murray starts the game missing his first 8 shots through 3 quarters, but makes 8 of 9 in the fourth quarter, finishing with a team-high 24 points. Murray says they were confident overcoming huge deficits.
We've been resilient all year. We've had those moments where we face adversity. That's a challenge to us. You know, we struggle to make shots, you know, 2 games straight now. We still find a way to pull out this win.
Four Nuggets scored over 20 points, including Nikola Jokic, who records a double-double with 21 points and 13 rebounds. DeMar DeRozan leads the Spurs with 31 points. Randy Stahl, Denver.
Thanks, Randy. The Nuggets-Spurs series now moves to San Antonio, Texas, where Game 3 will be played Thursday night. The NBA playoffs will continue later Wednesday night with 3 more games. The games will take place in Boston, Massachusetts, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Houston, Texas. In Boston, the Celtics are at home against the Indiana Pacers. The Celtics lead that first-round series 1-0. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Giannis Antetokounmpo, one of the front-runners for the MVP award. Giannis and the Bucks will be at home against the Detroit Pistons. Milwaukee leads that series 1-0, and our VOA basketball fans will remember the first team to win 4 games advances to the next round. And finally, in Houston, Texas, James Harden, the reigning NBA Most Valuable Player, and the Houston Rockets are at home against the Utah Jazz. Houston leads that series 1-0. People are asking me, Sonny, who are you picking for NBA MVP? I'm going with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Pronounce that 3 times fast. And the Milwaukee Bucks! And that wraps up the April 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nelson Lopez. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa,
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has made headlines for pushing through unprecedented reforms. But many challenges lie ahead in creating a national consensus. Discussing Ethiopia's future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have confirmed that TESS, NASA's new planet-hunting spacecraft, has discovered its first Earth-sized exoplanet. Also confirmed was the spacecraft's discovery of its sibling, a mini-sized Neptune exoplanet. Both planets orbit HD 21749, a sun-like star located about 53 light-years away in the Reticulum constellation. The recently discovered sub-Neptune planet is described as having 23 times the mass of Earth and a radius about 2.7 times larger than our planet. Not much is known about the Earth-sized exoplanet so far, except that it orbits its sun once every 8 days. TESS, an acronym for Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, is the successor to the Kepler spacecraft, which was decommissioned by NASA in 2018. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.